Study continues on the heads and the horns. It's a side study from Revelation 13. However, we are going verse by verse through Revelation 17. The reason being is that this is where we have the most information about the heads and the horns. And so that's why we are in advance going through this chapter. Last week we went, we gave an overview of the entire chapter. Because there are, primarily because there are time shifts. Some of the verses are looking at the situation from a certain period of time. Other verses are looking at the situation from another period of time. And so we thought the overview would be helpful. And so, we had left off with verse, 8, as it were. And, but we'll just reread the chapter just to, get it fresh in our minds. And, Sister Carrie, could you read, verses, chapter 17, verses 1 through 5, Ruth, 6 through, 10, and Sister Alice, 11 through the end.
In Revelation 17, 1 through 5, and there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great harlot that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth.
And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the seven heads and ten horns. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space.
And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. And he saith unto me, The waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth.
All right. Thank you, brethren. And you may recall that we had brought out last week when we were just making some general observations that the woman is mentioned, I think, 11 times thereabouts, and the seven heads and two horns are mentioned a couple of times. The kings are mentioned about five times. And so we were emphasizing that the theme of the chapter was the interaction of church and state during the time of the Roman Empire, if you will, and from the time when the harlot woman was at least in existence, even though it's not, the empire is not always under her direct control, but she has to be in existence and to fulfill the different symbols in the chapter. So we had brought out, now it's been a couple of weeks in a row, that we think the time frame of the chapter is based on Revelation 17 and verse 10, where it tells us there are seven kings. We know we've talked about these seven kings. Verse 9 said they were seven heads and seven mountains, and they are seven kings. They're all, it's all representing the same thought. As we know, these are the seven forms of government, one following the other, the Roman Empire. But it's a time when the woman was in existence during this time. She sitteth on these mountains. She's in existence. So it helps us understand that we don't have to start counting these seven forms of government over the Roman Empire. We don't have to worry about going all the way back to when Rome was founded. In fact, we don't even go back to the time at the first advent with Jesus. We actually go back to the time where Constantine, the Roman emperor, converted to nominal Christianity. Because you and I read in Revelation 12 when we studied it, that the tale of that Roman Empire dragon, the dragon being civil power, tried to capture, as it were, the infant seed of the harlot woman that would come to be the man. Well, let me read it. My mind goes in too many different ways. Revelation 12 and verse 4. And his tail, that is a great red dragon tail, drew the third part of the stars from heaven, cast them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman. This is the harlot. This is the true church. This is the church in general, which was ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born. Yeah, good thing I read it. It's the child that the woman had been pregnant with. And as we studied that, that was the impure element associated with the church from the time of the apostles. It had been developing. We remember that gestation period that we talked about, the 40 weeks. And so that was our period from Pentecost, 33 AD to 313 AD, when Constantine accepted nominal Christianity. So he was in control as the emperor, but this woman, apostate woman element was already in existence as this infant who was trying to have influence over the empire and with the civil powers. And Constantine actually listened to Athanasius and their arguments and accepted their error that God and Jesus were the same substance. And they exiled and excommunicated Arius, who was the true. So I'm saying all that to demonstrate that this woman sitteth on the seven mountains. She wasn't always in control, influencing the government in control, but she was there trying to make, you know, give her influence. But she wasn't always in control. More on that, but when we come to it here shortly. But that gets us to our point that we are in the sixth form of government based on verse 10. Five previous governments have come and gone. We're in the sixth. There's a seventh yet to come for a short time, and then an eighth. And this sixth one we have listed as Victor Emmanuel, starting in 1870, because he reunified Italy. So we've adopted him. And that's also the time in which Brother Russell wrote, in that time period of the sixth head. We believe the seventh is the, that would only be a short time, was the Nazi regime arising in the 1930s. But by 1945, it was over. So it was a short time. And so we think, because we like this sixth head starting in 1870, it puts us in a time where Brother Russell wrote. So we think in verse 1, he's one of those seven angels that had the bowls of the plagues. It was his writings that would constitute part of the plagues. And it was his writings that gave you and I the background history of the papacy and then the Protestant harlot daughter systems. And so Brother Russell really gave us the insights to be his writings, to be this messenger that would then be able to take us back in history to see papacy's background with the kings. And then we have these scriptures that prophetically point future. So that was our time situation. In verses 3, so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. I saw the woman sit upon the scarlet colored beast. So this was going back in history until it includes verse 6, 3 through 6, looking back in history. Verse 7, and the angel said unto me, why didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman. So that expression shows us to expect a change in the setting. That's how Revelation does it. There's something that gives you an indication to look for a change in the setting. And the change is that the John class has looked back at the history of papacy, and now it's being told what's yet to be in the future. So our verses 3 through 6, sorry, let me take a breath. In verse 1, the woman sitteth on the waters. The harlot woman, being the religious element of papacy, sat upon the waters. Our verse 15 told us the waters were people and nations. So the people always, the Catholics as people always supported the papacy, the woman, whether or not she was part of the government at the time. That again shows you that the woman is in existence during these seven forms of government as a religion. Okay. When he took me back, the woman is seated on the beast. Verse 3. took me back. I saw the woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast. So she's not sitting on the waters per se here, even though Roman Catholics always supported her. But now it's showing us that she's actually in control with the reins, as it were, riding the beast, which is a church-state government. And this would be our fourth head, starting with Charlemagne and the Papal Roman Empire from 800 AD down to 1799. So verses 3 through 6 would be the time period of that fourth head, or the Roman Empire, Holy Roman Empire, starting with Charlemagne being crowned, 800-1799. That's also known as a counterfeit millennium, or the papal millennium. Then in verse 7, we're going to pick up now, and let's just do this again. Let's read here verses 7 and 8. And Brother Adi, could you do that for us, please?
And the angel said to me, "Why are you astonished? I will explain to you the mystery of the woman and of the beast she rides, which has 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast which you saw once was, now is not, and yet will come up out of the abyss and go to its destruction. The inhabitants of the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world, will be astonished when they see the beast, because it once was, now is not, and yet will come."
And Brother Adi, what's that translation? That's good in some variety of ways.
It says that they will be astonished instead of amazed.
Well, that's true. What translation is that?
Oh, NIV.
Very good. Thank you. Yeah, that's very plain. That was very plain. So do you have opening comments on this, Brother Adi?
Just like you said, I mean, this is a point in time, because it references the beast that was and now is not, and that will come out of the abyss. And so in the future, it'll go to its destruction. The thing that's interesting to me here is that those that will be astonished are those whose names are not written in the book of life. Those who have wisdom will not be so astonished, because they were expecting this to happen. Over.
No, very good. Very good. So, brethren, we have, as it were, three time stamps. If we're following the order of these governments as we've suggested, and brethren, it's still, these are all suggestions. It's prophetically understood. It's symbolic. So we're not hard and fast, but this is our worksheet. Now appeals to our minds. So if you're looking at these eight suggested heads, the eighth is a repeat of one of the seven. In this verse, 8, we have a timestamp. The beast I saw was, that's a stamp, is not, that's a timestamp, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit to go to destruction. That's a third timestamp, so if you will. So if we're thinking that we're the John class, as it were, viewing this during the time of that sixth head, the Victor Emmanuel head time period. If that's what we're reading, then it means that the beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. How do we fit that in? Beast thou sawest was. Brother Dan.
Sister Carrie had her hand up, so I'll let her go first, Brother Rick.
Thank you. Sister Carrie.
Thank you. The beast was the papacy, and then became not in Brother Russell's time because of Victor Emmanuel. And then shall ascend is, I think, future tense, past our time even, or maybe it's ascending now. Over.
Okay. Good comments. Thank you. Brother Dan.
Yes, along with those comments, Brother Rick, was, as brought out, was in existence, during, especially 800, to 1799, the fourth head of the beast, and then is not, during this time of the sixth head, Victor Emmanuel, 1870, and is to come. This is a future, head, but it's the same, as the fourth, the Holy Roman Empire. So we can expect the rise to power for a short time of the Holy Roman Empire in the future. Over.
Okay, very good. Other comments on that? So are there any questions? Are the friends following what we're saying and was and is not and shall descend out of the bottomless pit? Is everyone following that? Brother Michael.
So just, I missed the time frame. I know you said this several times, but just please bear with me. What is the time frame for the was? What is the time frame for is? And then, potentially when it shall ascend?
Okay, very good. Now, I'm going to word this a little differently because maybe it makes more sense. The expression is and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit is telling us that the condition of this woman is that she's in the bottomless pit in this time frame. She's in the bottomless pit. So she's not riding the beast at this point in time. The beast is in the bottomless pit. So that church-state government of when the woman was riding the beast, that church-state government is no longer in existence. But it's not destroyed. It's only in a bottomless abyss. It will ascend and come back into existence in the future. And the suggestion is it's the eighth head in the future because then it will be destroyed. There's no heads after the eighth. So that church-state government will come back into existence. But the church-state government, that beast that the woman rode, was in the past in existence. So that was during the time frame of the Holy Roman Empire from 800 AD to 1799. So was 800 to 1799 and is in the bottomless pit. Church state government is not in existence from after 1799. During Napoleon period, the fifth head, during Victor Emmanuel period, the sixth head, during the Nazi fascist period, the seventh head, and we're suggesting it'll come out of the bottomless pit in the eighth head yet future. Brother Michael, did that help? Okay. Thank you. Ruth?
Well, I thought that the woman, when the beast was in the bottomless pit, was riding or was on the waters. Is that true?
When the beast, that is true.
But so she's really not in the bottomless pit.
Yeah, that was probably an overstatement by me. It was the beast was in the bottomless pit. I'm sure I misspoke. The woman was on the waters. She was not riding the beast when it's not a church state.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. Sister Debbie.
Just a couple things. I can't remember what verse it's in, but where it talks about the abyss and the smoke coming out of the abyss, is that about the same thing? And I cannot find the verse you're in. Are you still in 17?
We're in 17, and we're talking about verses 7 and 8.
Okay, because I was looking at 11, and that's almost the same thing.
Well, yeah. That's true. That's true.
Okay. That's what I thought. We were on 11. I'm going, what? You know. But anyway, that's it. I can't remember what verse it was in chapter 9, maybe.
Chapter 9, verse 1 and 2.
Okay. Yeah, and I wonder if that was related. Over.
Okay. So, so that's good. We were going to talk about that. This is a good time. So, but first to your observation in Revelation 17 and in verse 11, it tells us that the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into destruction. So this confirms that the beast, this church state system, it was in the past during the fourth head, during the Holy Roman Empire, 800 to 1799. It is not, because there's no church state government during our time frame. It's actually in the abyss. And our time frame, again, is the sixth head. It's during the time period of Victor Emmanuel from 1870 onward to the seventh. But it tells us this church state will come back into existence sometime in the future and will then be destroyed. That's all good and true. So back to the bottomless pit. I think the bottomless pit appears here in the 17th chapter. Well, I know that. It appears in the 9th chapter, verses 1 and 2 and 3. And it appears in Revelation 20. So, you all remember in Revelation 20, that it's the, well, let's just read it because it's pertinent here. And let's see. Brother David Vickery, could you read for us Revelation 20? And you might as well read 21 through 3 and then verse 7. 1 to 3 and then 7. Revelation 20.
Revelation 21 to 3, then 7. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up, and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season. In verse 7, and when 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison.
No, sorry, Brother David. Also include verse 10.
Verse 10, and the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night, forever and ever.
Okay. So, Brother David, in your opening comments, we're focusing on what's cast into the bottomless pit. It comes back out. What does it do when it comes out? And then what's the final fate of what was in the bottomless pit? Can you touch on that for us?
The time frame is for the millennial age. Satan, the devil, and his influence is cast into the bottomless pit for a little season, which is the millennial age, and then 7 says, and when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan will be loosed out of his prison for a testing of those in the millennial age for their final test, and then because Satan proved himself over and over and over, and his usefulness is done, the Lord, Jehovah destroys them in the lake of fire. I don't know how that, that's my bet.
All right. Good. No, that's very good. Good start. So, did anyone else want to comment on these verses? So what we see is there's a time frame in which Satan and his systems are restricted, and there's a binding process. And so the angel that comes down is our Lord upon our Jesus upon his return, and after 1874, the binding process of Satan and his systems begins with the increase of knowledge and truth and light. But there will come a time here, yet before us, when he and his systems are completely restrained in a bottomless pit. You see, they're going to be allowed to come back forth after a period of time. And the period of time is this millennium. And after the millennium, for a little season, Satan is loosed and he goes about trying to deceive the people. Once again, the Lord God is using Satan to test the people. And after the testing period is over, a little season, then Satan's destroyed. So we see the similarity. Something's in existence. Something that thing is then restrained, a bottomless pit. And at a later date, it's released. It goes back to doing what it had done previously before it went into the bottomless pit. And then after it starts doing what it had done previously before it went in the bottomless pit, then they're destroyed. So it's almost as saying these go into the bottomless pit at one time and then, they come forth. So this is pretty straightforward here. This fits very nicely with, it's not the same time frame, but it fits nicely with what we're reading in Revelation 17 about the church state government, how it persecuted people, the truth people. It was restrained, bottomless pit. And then it was released later to attack the truth and the truth people, but then it's destroyed. So we see a very close similarity here. Is there any comments on this Revelation 20 verses? We're all following that concept. Okay. Then let's look at that Revelation 9. This is the peculiar one. Before we go to Revelation 9, let's look at one more that's on the same subject. It's in Revelation 11. Revelation 11. We studied this verse by verse. And, let's see, Brother Dan, you're next on my screen. Sister Connie walked off. So you get to read for us next, please, in Revelation 11, verse 7, if you could. I know it's just jumping right in the middle.
And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascended out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. So I'm thinking just off the top of my head, we're talking about the Old New Testament. And when they have finished their testimony, the beast that ascended out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. So this is a future event, the papacy ascending out of the bottomless pit. They'll have this hour of power, as we see that scene in Revelation 17. And I'll stop talking there because I don't want to confuse anyone with my words after this. Over.
Okay. Yes, it's very, very tricky here because we only read this one verse. Anyone else care to comment on it? Sister Gina.
Just a note from when we did study it, I wrote that the make war and kill them was during the French Revolution, and that this was the first time the beast is mentioned in Revelation. That's it.
All right. Okay, good. Thank you. And so yeah, we've got two views so far. Ruth?
Yeah, I've got a third one that this was in the 1500s at the end of the testimony in sackcloth when the Bible started to come out of sackcloth and the papacy was triumphant over them and thought that they had obliterated them and rejoiced over that. I can't remember the actual date. It's 1500s. Anyway.
Yeah. Nope. That's good. Thank you. That's true. So Sister Gina, we certainly understand your comments. There's probably the majority of brethren feel that the 1260 year period of this chapter has to do with, ending in 1799 with the French Revolution era. But the French Revolution actually ends in 1799. So all that being said, when we studied it in the class here, Brother Michael, go ahead.
No, I was just going to comment that the war was made against the Bible.
Yes. Okay, very good. So when we had studied this, when we went through it, we considered the two different suggested periods of the 1260 years. Ruth.
Sorry, I meant to mention that in 7:11-7, when they shall have finished their testimony, that's when the two witnesses were finishing their testimony in sackcloth, then the beast, and then that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit, I have in parenthesis, as just an identifier. So it's not ascending out of the bottomless pit then. It's just the one that we're going to see ascending out of the bottomless pit in the future. That beast shall make war against them. So anyway, that just goes along with that particular thought. Over.
Okay, no, that's good. That's good. Other comments? Okay, so let me piece it together. We had considered the two possibilities of the 1260 years. The one we're more familiar with that we think is actually more prominent in Scripture is from 539 A.D. to 1799 A.D. But Brother Russell offers an alternative understanding, and that's from the 300s to the 1500s. And that 1260-year period was when church councils took over, the Bible, the Old and New Testament, the two witnesses were in sackcloth and ashes. They were confined mainly to the dead language of Latin, the Latin Vulgate being the Bible of available. But then after this 1260-year period of the Old and New Testament being in the dead languages, more or less, during the 1500s, we had this great Reformation, and we had over 70 different Bible languages come forth. And we studied that in detail. We have the ones like Tyndale and Luther and others, they were all actively putting the Bible into the common language of the people. And it's the persecution, the beast is the same beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit in the future. but is identifying us of this beast is the church and state system during the Holy Roman Empire period, during the period of the fourth head. And it's during that period when the woman was riding the beast. And so the papacy publicly purchased and burned the Bibles that were coming out in the language of the people. And we focused on Tyndale's translation and how the bishops were purchasing Tyndale's translation when it came to the shores of Great Britain. And then they publicly burned them. Sometimes it was some of the places where St. Paul's Cathedral in London, very prominent. So they were doing this burning for 3.5 years of the papacy purchased Bibles to be publicly burned. And we have an exact dating on that. And we do thank Brother Frank Chaloux for helping to put that together on records, so that we could look at those records, not just his notes, but look at those records and see that that actually did bear out. And so, anywho, what we see here is this reference to the beast that shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. Now, I want to say this, it might sound funny to you, but we think the beast only ascends out of the bottomless pit once. We don't think the beast comes out of the bottomless pit twice, because if it did, we should be told that the beast went into the bottomless pit twice. Let me say that again. We think the beast comes out of the bottomless pit once. The beast is put into the bottomless pit once. When the beast comes out of the bottomless pit once, it ends up being destroyed. So this is when we were studying Revelation 11, we did look at Revelation 17 because we were saying, put your notes in pencil. Don't write it in the margin of your Bible, because when we get to Revelation 17, either this interpretation on Revelation 11 will appeal to you more or it won't. Because we're thinking, we think that the two have to harmonize together. So, because we think this beast is the church state government, that this is referring to the fourth head period. This is referring to the part of the time frame in which this beast was in existence. And it's during the time frame of the fourth head. I'm repeating myself. What happens is that we think the beast that was persecuting the church and the word of God was suppressed by Napoleon, continued suppressed during Victor Emmanuel, continued suppressed during the fascist Nazi government, and will then reappear briefly, come out of that bottomless pit as an eighth head, the eighth form of government, which was of the seven. So it's a repeat head. It's a repeat of church and state. And then it'll be destroyed. So, okay. Anything here on Revelation 11? Brother Dan.
Just a question, and I'll just make a statement and probably show my misunderstanding, but hopefully it'll make sense and will be helpful. And we appreciate the review, and I've got all my notes and pen from years gone by, so I really got to rectify that. We understand and appreciate the history of the Bible coming out of dead languages and giving their testimony during that period of time, 300s to the 1500s. And then afterwards, we have this we've got the Roman Catholic Church trying to destroy the Bibles, burning them publicly and so on. That all happens during this period of the fourth head. But the putting of the beast into, let me read it. And when they shall have finished their testimony, that is the Old New Testament, the Bible, the beast that ascended out of the bottomless pit shall make war. So this is a future event after 1799, as Revelation 17 outlines it, during the fifth, sixth, and seventh head. This is the time of being in the bottomless pit before it comes out and has power as the eighth head. I'll just stop there.
Well, there's a few things we thought you got right, and a few things we would just view differently, Brother Dan. But we'll zero in on that. But we'll let Brother Adi comment, and maybe he'll hit it.
No, I didn't have a comment on that. I had a slightly different comment. So if someone else wants to take that first,
okay, all right. Don't let me forget to come back, Brother Adi. But did someone want to comment after Brother Dan's comment? Take this verse. Revelation 11 and verse 7, and you kind of have to slice it up, because that's what you do when you have a parenthetical thought. And Ruth had mentioned this, but let me repeat it. The words that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit. Put that in parentheses. The beat up that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit. The parentheses means that is going to actually happen sometime in the future. But it's telling us now to help us identify this beast. And this beast is still the same church and state government. And in this time period of the 11th chapter that we're considering, it's the church and state government during our fourth head. So read it without that. Let me read it without that parenthetical thought. I'll read that verse. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them, and their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city. So take that right out, and it flows, because it's telling us that it's when the Old and New Testament, clothed in dead languages, when they finish their testimony in dead languages, it's after they finish their testimony. So you have to have your 1260 years over. Then they're persecuted and killed, the Old and New Testament. That's not what happened in 1799. That didn't happen in 1800 and 1881. The Old and New Testament weren't killed. They were killed, as it were, in the 1500s. When the papacy was purchasing the newly translated Bibles in English, and they were burning them publicly in the streets of the city, Christendom. That did happen at the end of the 1500s. That did happen at the end of the 1260 years in the 1500s. And we do have a 3.5 year period for that. I just don't have it written in front of me. So, Brother Dan, does that make sense? Or did I hit on it?
You did. And that parenthetical thought really is what helps make it clear. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. All right, good. Brother Adi, please.
In reference to the verse that says, now when they have finished their testimony, the two witnesses have always testified as long as they existed. And this comes at a point in time when they will now no longer testify. I was interested if it coincides with John 9:4, where it says, as long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no man can work. Is this no man can work? Because it's when we're working, we're testifying with the Old and New Testament. Is this, could this coincide? Because the night when the beast was active in the past, it was considered a dark ages. And so it's, when it comes back out of the abyss, it'll also be a darker time. Over.
Well, Brother Adi, read for us in Revelation 11, verse 3. And I know it's not really fair to be jumping in the way we did. Read that verse 3.
And I will appoint my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1260 days, clothed in sackcloth. So this is during the beast's reign, right?
Partially. It begins before that, and then it continues during part of the reign. But the testimony, when they shall have finished their testimony, Brother Adi, we think they finished their testimony clothed in sackcloth. That's the ending point. And that's when the beast wants to kill them, because as long as they were in sackcloth in dead languages, the papacy didn't care about the Old and New Testament so much. They kept it out of the hands of the people. But when in the Reformation, all these Bibles started coming forth in a variety, many of the common language of the people, that's when it needed to try to kill it.
Yeah, that's good. That makes sense.
Okay.
Thanks.
Right. Food for thought. Thank you. Sister Cheryl.
Well, I don't expect us to go there, but I have to admit I'm a little confused on the 300 dates of the 1260 years, but could you give me that date again? And wasn't there another place in scripture where that 1260 came up and we referred to it as the 300 and some year starting point? Do you know which verse, where that was from?
Well, I believe it's here.
Is this the one where it was?
This is the place. And, it was when, if you have your notes on Revelation 11, you'll be able to, you know, look back to that. Now, it's true. I didn't write them out as notes, but I see Sister Roseanne has her hand up and maybe she's got something. And then Ruth, Roseanne.
Yeah. I think Sister Cheryl was looking for those, 3 year period.
3.5 years.
Yes, it was from November 23, 1526, and it until May 24, 1530. That was the public burning.
Very good. Okay, that's great. And that's what we had covered. Yes. No, I'm not giving up, Sister Cheryl. Let me go to Ruth and see if she had something more on that.
I'm just going to give the reference of reprint 5742 that outlines the alternative possibilities of the 1260.
Okay. So, yes, reprint 5742, reprint 5752, and the first volume in the beginning, page II. First volume, page II. Those were ones that we read together in the class when we studied Revelation 11. And we considered Brother Russell's alternate view. And he doesn't give this definitive dating that Sister Roseanne read, which is actually exactly 3.5 years. when you count the days on the calendars. Brother Frank Shulu put that together, but he did it by using the records of historical records of when the papacy started to purchase Bibles to burn publicly in England and the last time they purchased Bibles to publicly burn. That was this 3.5 year period. There were many other Bible burnings, that's true. But these were ones particularly where the beast, the church-state government under the papacy, purchase these Bibles to burn publicly. And it's because the two witnesses were no longer in the dead languages of Latin, but now they were in the common language of so many people. And remember, I think we went through and we looked at a list of Bible translations that had come out in the 1500s. We got it off the internet. But there was like 70 in the 1500s that came out, different Bible translations. Amazing, amazing amount. So it seemed to fit with that period of time that we were referring to. Brother Russell does mention William Tyndale in 1526. He does mention that back in the 300s, there was church councils started to replace Bible study. And that was true. 325, the first great church council of Nicaea that we talked about earlier with Constantine and Arius and Athanasius. But he doesn't give you an exact starting date. But brother, I want to emphasize something. In Revelation 11, the Bible is focusing that once that 1260-year period is over, we have a 3.5 years of public killing or destruction of the Old and New Testament. So it's very specific about the ending point because there would be this 3.5 year persecution of the Bible. And so we can, that's where we dial in and we could better focus on the end of the 1260 years because we have a 3.5 year period of the public persecution of the Bible. And that's one of the main reasons, brethren, we didn't, the French Revolution ended in 1799, began in 1789, lasted for 10 years, ended in 1799. So it wasn't after the 1260 years the Bible's persecuted. The brethren put the persecution of the Bible before the ending of the 1260 years when they put it before 1799. And even there, we looked at the record, and the historical record didn't demonstrate a 3.5 year persecution of the Bible that way. So we considered all that. It was fascinating. One day we hope to get it down into written notes. Sister Cheryl, any more on your original comment question?
Well, yes, I did have those burning of the Bibles from verse 11, and then I'm seeing by my notes it's back in verse 2, so that 1260 period would be 266 to 1526. So I'm looking at my notes and kind of putting it together. I guess my confusion a bit made me off-think it, but now I'm putting it together, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and yeah, well, that's easy. It was a pretty complex study. And, okay. Anything else on Revelation 11? Okay. So it kept our bottomless pit with this beast ascending out of the bottomless pit in sync with our Revelation 17. That is the church state government that's going to reascend, come back in the future. Because it's not in the pit in Revelation 11. It's not in the pit there. It's just a parenthetical thought to tell you this is going to be the same beast that after it goes into the bottomless pit, it will ascend in the future. Sister Carrie.
Could you clarify for me? I think I heard that the Satan goes in the bottomless pit and the beast or the church state goes in the bottomless pit for the same period of time and are both released at the end? Are these two separate entities, or have I just read that there are two and there's actually just one and the same? Or
there are two separate entities being referred to, even though Satan works through papacy, but they're two different time periods. Two different time periods. The beast of a church-state government, which the harlot rides, that's its own church-state government that we've been talking about. Revelation 20, with Satan and his systems, they are in a bottomless pit for the majority of the millennium. They're being that they're in the process of binding. However, they're resisting. But when the peaceful kingdom begins, but just before us, they're fully bound in the bottomless pit, sealed over. That's Satan and his false systems. That's when the highway of holiness opens up. Then, at the end of that 1,000 years, then there's a little season of testing of perfected mankind. So Satan's released out of that bottomless pit, and he once again goes out to try to deceive the people. And that's the people's test. Then once that is over, then it tells us Satan is destroyed. Does that help? Okay. Oh, you're muted. Sorry.
Did you just say the beast time frame?
So the beast time. No, the beast time frame. It was the fourth head from 800 AD to 1799. Fourth head. Church state government. And then it's in the bottomless pit right now. It will be released in the future, and it will be the eighth head. A repeat of this fourth head. It will repeat as the eighth head. That's in the future for a short time, and then it's destroyed.
So the time that they're released could actually be near the same time or the same event, but we don't know.
Well, no. The beast comes out of the bottomless pit in the future. We have a church state government for as an eighth head. Then it's destroyed. That's before the peaceable kingdom happens.
Oh, okay. This will sink in. I digest this. Thank you.
And after that beast is destroyed, after that eighth head, that church state system is destroyed, it's shortly after that that we will have our peaceable kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
After the peaceable kingdom, Satan's released out of the bottomless pit to go out and test mankind.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, certainly. Okay. Other comments here on Revelation 11? Well, if that wasn't confusing enough, let's look at Revelation 9. All right. Revelation 9, and it's our verses 1 through 3. And hold on 1 second. 1 through 3. And verse 11, chapter 9, 1 through 3 and 11. Sister Roseanne, you care to read that for us, please?
Yes. chapter 9, then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. And to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit, like the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Then out of the smoke, locusts came upon the earth, and to them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. And you said 11?
Yes, please.
Okay. And they had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon.
Okay, very good. So you have any opening comments on this, Sister Roseanne?
Well, we're in the, just what I'm briefly looking at with my notes. We're in the first woe.
Which woe?
First.
Not first.
I lost my, crumb bridge and I'm having a
time. Oh, you're doing well for that.
Oh boy. Okay, not I'm fifth. Sorry.
Fifth.
We're in the fifth trumpet.
Fifth trumpet, yeah.
Yes, yes. But I thought it was the first woe, too. I have first woe.
Oh, did you say first woe?
I said first woe.
Oh, I am sorry. You said first woe, and I was expecting you. I didn't expect you to talk about the woes. I thought you were going to talk about the fifth angel sounding, because that's what you read. You didn't read the woe part.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, this is the fifth trumpet with Wycliffe. His time period was 1367 to 1517. And like Arius, he was a star. He was the morning star of the Reformation, and he had fallen just as Arius had fallen from the nominal heavens. I think that's all I can give you right now.
No, that's very good. And again, I apologize.
No, that's okay. I can't really speak.
You're doing good. You're doing good. I think you're doing better than me with the challenge. All right. Other comments on this? Well, Brother Chris, you've been quiet. We'd like to give us your take on these verses. I know you're familiar with this.
No, I'm just having the friends ferret it all out. We've been through, 9 and 11 and pretty thoroughly. So hopefully they can sharpen up their notes on that and make these connections that you're trying to, I'm very familiar with 17 myself, but all of these things have to be understood to really grasp the big picture of Revelation. So I just appreciate your patience hammering through it and trying to get everybody on board. It can be confusing. And like you say, first exposure and then repetition. And then, I don't have anything to add. I don't want nothing to visit or sharpen up myself. So,
okay.
Thank you for asking.
Certainly, certainly. Okay, good. Brother Michael, and then I see a bunch of hands across the top.
Right. So this period was the time of Wycliffe, right? And basically, I think this was also the time when there were two popes jostling for authority, But what was interesting with the Wycliffe conversation at that time was that he was still part of the clergy. So it wasn't so much that he was excommunicated from the system. So he was still in the system and he had that opportunity to spread the truth. So I think in relation to what we are trying to discuss right now, it basically was almost at the time when, the church and state conversation was beginning to fade away. So this was one of the things that probably accelerated it, and led to, the various translations that came about and whatnot.
Okay, very good. So yes, as you stated, this is the John Wycliffe was considered the morning star of the Reformation, the fifth trumpeter, the fifth messenger, fifth stage of the church, and then Martin Luther was to follow as the sixth. So I'd put you in the Reformation proper. And so yes, beginning of these transformations. Good. Sister Debbie.
I'm beginning to see that the abyss, like in verse 2, is a place where things are hidden. Here, in verse 2, they hid the truth. That's where papacy hid the truth. And and the pit was opened and the smoke that came out was the truth. Or at least some of it. And excuse me. And, The the abyss where Satan goes is where he's kept hidden, where he can't do anything, like the truth couldn't do anything during this time. So that this is the truth coming out, and it, in the eyes of papacy, it was like a great smoke that was horrible for them. So that's what I'm seeing. Over.
Okay, very good. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. Ruth.
Similarly, it's the time period of the, this was all from the vantage point of the nominal church. So from the nominal church, Wycliffe fell from their graces because he translated the scriptures, and the locusts were those that were his followers, and they were considered like scorpions on the earth, poisonous. And then I have that in verse 11, the angel of the bottomless pit was Wycliffe, and they considered him the destroyer of churches. Over.
And why is it Hebrew and Greek in that verse 11?
His
name? Hebrew and Greek?
It's Hebrew and Greek. Is it because of his translation work?
And he translated what?
The Old and New Testament.
He translated, that's right, from the Hebrew and Greek.
Okay.
All right. Great. Very good. And then Sister Cheryl?
Basically, the same comments pointing out to on the smoke, the air, Wycliffe translating the scriptures into English. Over.
Okay, very good. So, other comments? Third day.
Very similar to what's been said, but in verse 11, the king over them is the angel, already stated Wycliffe. But in the last portion of the verse, it says, well, let me read the whole thing because I'll confuse myself. And they had a king, Wycliffe, over them, which is the angel, this fifth angel of the bottomless pit, which name, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. And I have a note at this Apollyon, or maybe it's in the margin. It is a destroyer. And so when we think of the work that Wycliffe did when he translated the Bible into the common language English, he destroyed the errors that were being taught by the papacy. So the truth uncovered the errors and destroyed these errors. As truth always does, over.
Okay, very good, very good. So here, brethren, just to round out our consideration of the bottomless pit, that the friends have rightly identified with the first six trumpets, it shows what's happening historically in the period of the time of the first six churches from the nominal religious point of view. So the things that look terrible when we read it were actually blessings because that was the truth. It was the nominal church that viewed them as terrible. But actually they were blessings. And as the friends have brought out well, the truth was in a bottomless pit condition during the nominal church's heyday. But beginning with the early star of the Reformation, with John Wycliffe in the 1300s, there began a change. It was gradual, but there began a change, and these truths, which had been kept hidden by the nominal church, started to emerge, and particularly it was because the Bible started to emerge from the dead languages ever so slightly with John Wycliffe putting the Bible into English in the 1300s. But it would gather steam in the sixth trumpet period, with Martin Luther putting the Bible in German, Tyndale improving the translation of English, and then other translations coming forth across the continent in other languages. But here it's just demonstrating that the Lord God started to arrange to bring his Bible back after it was being suppressed in a bottomless pit. Interestingly, in this bottomless pit scenario, because what was in the bottomless pit was good, is good, the Word of God being confined, guess what? It's not destroyed. When the beast comes out of the bottomless pit, that church and state, after a little time, it goes into destruction. It's destroyed. And when Satan, after he's bound the remainder of that 1,000 years, he comes out of the bottomless pit for a little season, and then guess what? He's destroyed. But we don't have the Word of God being destroyed. It comes out of the bottomless pit, and you can never get it back. The brethren have used a symbol we thought was so good, even though it takes on us from a story. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. When the Bible started to come forth, all papacy could do was just try to bring forth more errors or persecute it, or persecute those who were translating it, persecute those who were distributing it. But it couldn't get the genie back in the bottle. The truth started to continue to grow and expand and become more publicly available all the way down to our day. We got as many Bibles as we want, right? Now the challenge is to spend the time studying it correctly. That's our challenge of our day. But we're looking back in history at the brethren who went before us and what they went through. But that shows, again, it helps us understand the symbolism in Revelation of the bottomless pit and what it represents. Something is being suppressed only later to come forth. And then if it's good, it'll last. If it's bad, it'll be destroyed. Any other comments on that? Okay. So, Sister Debbie, I think we're all the way back to your comment on these things. I didn't know. Did you have anything more with your comment or question on this from where we began?
Not as long as the dog went off. Sorry.
Okay. So we're looking at our times winding down. We go back to Revelation 17. We had read verses 7 and 8. We are in the time period of the sixth head, the angel messenger, the writings of Brother Russell is showing the John class after 1870 and onward, showing us the truth about papacy, church-state system, the Protestant harlot daughter systems. He's shown us that this church-state system will come again in the future after the sixth head, after the seventh head. It'll be the eighth, we think. That's what it tells us in verse 11, that this beast that was in the bottomless pit cometh out. It's the eighth. It's of the seven. It's a repeat. And then at the end of verse 8 is brought out, the people on the earth who marvel after the church and state, in other words, they're in agreement with it. They marvel. These are nominal Christians. And the nominal Christians, they're the earth class. They're restrained. They have a religious restraint, but they're nominally restrained. And they aren't written in the book of life of the 144,000. Now, you and I studied the book of life back in the earlier chapters of Revelation, back in probably the second chapter. And we saw that there are several books of life. There's a book of life that's specific for the faithful of the little flock. And then that's the divine family. And then there's a book of life for restored mankind, those who would be faithful in the future to God. but they would have a lesser reward. They would be on earth. And the ancient worthies would fit in there. And the great company fits in, not the divine family, but they fit in with their faithfulness, but not being a called class. It's not their focus. So it's telling us, and we believe at the end of verse 8, that these who aren't of this book of life, it's the divine nature book of life. They're not included there. So then that leaves us, with verse 9, and with our time all but expired, we'll just say we'll pick up with verse 9, Lord willing, next week.